Now from the KSFR newsroom, KSFR's Tom Trowbridge looks at the top local news headlines for this Friday, September 27th.
The Federal Drug Enforcement Administration says its Operation High Desert Bash has put five Santa Fe residents in federal jail in Albuquerque on a 16-count indictment, charging the five with dealing oxycodone. The five were due to be arraigned in Albuquerque federal court today. The DEA's operation had been underway since January. The defendants each face a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison and a $1 million fine on each of the drug trafficking charges. A New Mexico legislative audit blames inadequate enforcement for the state not collecting up to $56 million annually from the trucking industry. The Legislative Finance Committee report suggests the state Motor Transportation Division hire more staff to ensure truckers pay a weight distance tax that helps finance highway construction and maintenance. The MTD issues citations to truckers who don't comply and also inspects trucks for safety violations and contraband, such as illegal drugs. Valles Caldera National Preserve managers have approved an annual budget that seeks another $3 million earmark from Congress to balance its books. But preserve board members are concerned that such federal dependence puts the preserve on federal on shaky ground in the future. They are pushing for adoption of legislation sponsored by New Mexico's two senators, calling for the National Park Service to assume management of the 89,000-acre Caldera Preserve. Such a change is seen as the only way to prevent it from becoming a unit of the Santa Fe National Forest. Kirtland Air Force Base is conducting a test today of a system to pump contaminated groundwater out from under the base's massive underground jet fuel spill. The Albuquerque Journal says the month-long test will help determine if the approach will work as a long-term remediation strategy. It's the first time since the 1999 discovery of the contamination of the fuel-tainted water that'll be pumped and treated. The slowly migrating plume, created by fuel spills from decades ago, is widely seen as a threat to Albuquerque's water supplies. Taos Pueblo is celebrating its annual feast days early next week in honor of the Pueblo's patron saint, San Jeronimo. The two-day culturally rich celebration begins at 5 p.m. Sunday and continues through Monday. Pueblo artisans, as well as Native American artists from the Southwest, will sell their handmade works at the event. Taos Pueblo is the only living Native American community designated both a World Heritage Site by UNESCO and a National Historic Landmark. The Pueblo's multi-storied adobe buildings have been continuously inhabited for more than 1,000 years. Starting Tuesday, New Mexicans who apply for and receive public assistance will notice increased accessibility to the Human Services Department's Medicaid, food stamps, energy, and cash assistance services. The HSD says applicants will be able to apply at computer stations at the HSD's Income Support Division offices, along with traditional methods of application. The new system will roll out in 14 southern New Mexico counties first, after being successfully tested in Española during the summer. Weather for Santa Fe, partly sunny this afternoon with highs in the upper 60s. A passing cold front will drop temperatures down to near freezing tonight, though perhaps not in the Santa Fe metro area itself, according to meteorologist Jennifer Palucki with the Weather Service office in Albuquerque.
The mountains, the Santa Fe foothills, will probably drop below freezing. In fact, some mountain locales will probably get a hard freeze tonight. So we're looking at some of the coldest temperatures of the season so far. The average first freeze in Santa Fe is about October 13th. So it is a bit early, but the earliest on record is right at September 3rd. So we're well beyond that.
Expect sunny and cool tomorrow with highs in the mid-60s, rising to 70 degrees by Sunday. I'm Tom Trowbridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, investors are reacting to the fast approach of the Washington debt deadline. All the major indices in negative territory. The Dow off 83 at 15,244. The NASDAQ down 4 points at 3,783. And the S&P 500 is off 8. It stands at 1,690. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from the Santa Fe Farmers Market, providing fresh, locally grown food to our community. The Farmers Market is now open every Saturday and Tuesday from 7 a.m. to noon in the rail yard. The Southside Market takes place on Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 6 at the Santa Fe Place Mall parking lot, Zafferano entrance. On Sundays from 10 to 4, the market hosts the Rail Yard Artisans Market, featuring fine arts and crafts, food, music, and more. To learn more, visit SantaFeFarmersMarket.com.
10 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. The Senate today has voted on a short-term measure to keep the government running. There's only 3 days left before the money runs out. Now, that bill must go back to the House as the Senate stripped out their defund Obamacare provision. But little chance of the House acting on that today. They have adjourned. Just before we went to air, Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham spoke to KSFR about the looming government shutdown, and we asked her about the potential for any compromise between the two sides at this point.
I don't think that's a dirty word. I think that we have to compromise. You know, policymaking can never be done if it's all of one and none of the other. And typically, that kind of policy doesn't work when you implement it because it's too harsh, it's too narrow, it doesn't meet the needs of most Americans and most of our constituents in our districts. And that's why people are disgusted. And, you know, I'm in a position, like many new members of Congress, where we're apologizing for allowing the hostility and the partisanship to get to where it is and having no part in the Budget Control Act or the sequester or anything else that's, I think, even aided in this really large divide.
The Congresswoman says not only Republicans, but Democrats as well will need to consider modifying their stance on issues.
I think there are many aspects that will need modification and adjustment, and I think there's going to be lots of places where Democrats are going to have to be open to that, and Republicans are going to have to be willing to fairly look at the data that already exists that says it's working. Let's see how it looks over the long haul and then make adjustments that make sense for America. And we're trying to create, almost got 80 new members. We're trying to create that dynamic so that we're ready to propose those kinds of reforms and we're ready to work together on them. And that's just one example. It's not the only example.
And Lujan Grisham had this to say to people who are in danger of being furloughed by ongoing sequestration cuts.
In New Mexico, there are 7,000 individuals who are furloughed, 2,000 of them in my district. And it is painful, particularly when you look at many households in my district where both earners are in the same kind of civilian positions where they're being laid off as a result of the sequester or furloughed. And that means they can't make two mortgage payments and you can't catch up. And I wish that we weren't piecemealing an effort to stabilize families when there's a loss of income in this blind cut called sequester, and we have a 27% investment by federal dollars. I don't like the sequester. I want it repealed and removed. I think there are much better ways to operate. And the only thing to say to many of us, frankly, on both sides of the aisle, that are fighting to have the sequester removed, but until the Tea Party allows for a real debate and a real effort to come up with a budget and an appropriations plan that takes care of families, I'm afraid that we're stalled for at least the next quarter.
New Mexico First District Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham speaking to KSFR News today. We'll be back with more of At Noon in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM, who recently brought the Prosperity Energy Storage Project online. The project allows PNM to store solar energy, helping to provide consistent solar power even on cloudy days. This is the first solar storage plant integrated into the grid in the nation. If you have a question for PNM, you can talk to them on Twitter or Facebook or visit PNM online at pnm.com.
The University of New Mexico Hospital Cancer Center has received an important recognition regarding their radiation oncology program in the form of formal accreditation. Here to discuss it with us is Dr. Thomas Schrader, the medical director of the UNM Hospital Cancer Center. Dr. Schrader, talk to us about this rather important milestone.
One of the most important and probably only accreditations that radiation oncology departments can receive in the United States of America is an accreditation from the American College of Radiology. And this is a rather rigorous review of all of our processes, how we deal with the physics of radiation oncology, how we deal with the patient care of radiation oncology, how we deal with things like quality assurance vis-a-vis patient satisfaction surveys and other types of surveys, reviews of patients. It's rather rigorous and fairly complete. So we went through this process, which is actually a rather lengthy process. We started the process back last year in about December, submitted an application in January. And then they reviewed a whole bunch of documents and procedures that we presented to them that they require. They go through all of that. They look at a bunch of our data, and then they actually come out and perform a review, which they came out and did last month, and reviewed our patients that are on treatment and all of our processes and interrogated us about how we do all the things that we do, and we came out ahead. So they said that we were good enough to receive accreditation.
What are the advantages of this accreditation?
So the real advantages to the institution is radiation oncology is a very complicated field, and when you have a department up and running, people in these departments do things a little bit differently. And so to get external validation, meaning validation from experts and others in your field to look at your stuff and say, hey, you're doing a good job, is very valuable to us because what we want to do is provide quality. And to provide quality, we always think we're providing quality, but it's nice to have somebody else to come and say, hey, yeah, you really are a quality institution. And it's good to have experts to do that. And this is the kind of thing that I think you're going to see more of from just about every type of medicine in the United States of America. And our cancer center actually has accreditation from a number of different institutions, surgeons, medical oncologists, other cancer groups looking at how we do what we do, to see that we're doing it the best way we possibly can. And so for us, that's invaluable.
Radiation oncology has been an integral part of the UNM Cancer Center for years. Why get the accreditation now?
Actually, this is something that we have been doing for a number of years. So I think we first did it, and I'm not sure I'm correct about this, but we first did this probably about 10 years ago. We had renewed it back in 2008, I believe, and these accreditations are for a period of 3 years. It lapsed in about 2011, and at that time is when we were opening the new cancer center, and so we had our hands full doing a lot of other activities, and so we weren't able to move forward and re-credential with them. So we went back and got our recredentialing just now.
Doctor, several years ago, the radiation oncology department had some major problems, and it would appear that those have been corrected now.
Actually, the history of the radiation oncology department at the University of New Mexico is kind of an interesting thing, and I'm sort of a fan of looking into it. It turns out it's harder to look into than you would think. But back shortly after the medical school was founded, we had a rather stellar program here. We had a big head honcho. He was the former chairman at Yale come and start up a radiation oncology department here. The reason he came is because they were doing research at Los Alamos National Lab treating patients with esoteric particles. That lasted for a period of about 8 or 10 years, and at that time our department was quite good. And then when he left, it kind of slid downhill. And so it reached a bottom probably about 10 years ago. And then we've been building it up ever since. And we've run into some difficulties here or there and some setbacks. But we now have some good momentum, and there's a lot of changes that we'd like to make moving forward to try and make our department better and better. And one of those is education. Right now we're looking in the next probably 3 or 4 years of starting a residency program for radiation oncologists, which hasn't been in existence since that gentleman came from Yale many, many years ago.
Looking ahead, what do you see as the major challenges facing the radiation oncology program?
For radiation oncology, our plans moving forward is we want to improve in several different arenas. One of them is we are starting to set up our own stereotactic radiosurgery program. You may be aware that New Mexico has a Gamma Knife. This is at the Loveless Institution, which is where we do most of our stereotactic radiosurgery. We're going to try and get a program up and running here. Hopefully that will happen quite soon.
Any final thoughts?
I think that these types of credentialing processes are very important for medicine as a whole. So we're quite pleased that the American College of Radiology found our department to be a good program. And hopefully we will continue to maintain our certification moving forward so that we can provide the best quality care in New Mexico.
Dr. Thomas Schrader of UNM Hospital Cancer Center, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR. Time now in the KSFR newsroom is 12:20. Today we bring you part two of an interview by KSFR's Marion Cox, speaking to Santa Fe County Manager Catherine Miller and the county's Public Works Director Adam Leegland. Marion joins us now by phone. Marion, just to set this up for our listeners, we're going to hear discussion of government transparency. Now, this has been a significant issue for the county in years past, yes?
Well, thanks, Dan. You're right. Santa Fe County has had a rather checkered past in the last decade with respect to issues associated with corruption, allegations of corruption and patronage, transparency. And one of the issues that Catherine Miller, under her leadership as the county manager over the last 3 years, has really made major progress on is the issue of transparency. The county is now winning national awards for transparency. Its website is regularly being cited as one of the best in the country in terms of providing just basic information on the full range of county services and operations. And I think that what we're learning in this interview with Catherine is that this has been a very deliberate, a very long-term and not very widely publicized effort on her part, and the county is beginning to see real results.
Thank you, Marion. And here now is part two of Marion's interview with Santa Fe County's Catherine Miller and Adam Leegland.
Santa Fe County is winning national awards for transparency. Is that correct?
Yes, we got another A-plus from the Sunshine Review on how our website puts all the information about county operations on our website. We've also received, for the fifth year in a row now, Government Finance Officers Association, which is a national, for our budget document, where we've followed best practices in putting all the information in our annual budget, and we just got an award for last year's budget document. We also got an award from the same organization for our audit.
So lots of progress in Santa Fe County on a couple of very important fronts, fiscal management, capital improvement planning, public works. As you look to the next year, what would you identify as the top three priorities?
The number one priority, I'd say, over the next year is to make sure that we get our land use code implemented. Now, we have still quite a few steps to go along with that. We'll have the draft coming out here, hopefully by the end of the month. It has been redrafted based upon public comment that we had.
What are your other top two priorities?
I would say from a management perspective, to continue to improve our internal procedures, that the actual structure, internal structure, to get those projects done and done well exists. So we're continually working on beefing up the internal structure of the county with proper staff, proper training for staff, and good processes and procedures to get things done.
And Adam, I know you are the guy on the hot spot. We've just been through a month of much needed and much appreciated rain, but it hasn't been a joyride for you, has it? Residents from all over the county are either thrilled that you're out helping clear their roads or wonder why you're not there clearing their roads. Give us just an idea of what the last 2 weeks have been like for public works staff here at the county.
Well, we've definitely been busy, and I'll say up front that I've been very pleased with how our crews have been reacting. It's been a coordination across the entire county, you know, the emergency managers, the first responders, and then also just the people out there driving the heavy equipment. But also behind that, we have people who are involved with workplace safety, making sure the signage is up, you know, detour ahead, that sort of stuff. So it's been a multifaceted response, and I've been really pleased with it. You know, we've put in over 800 hours of overtime in the last 10 days just with people out driving the equipment. I can't tell you how much extra driving we've done, what our fuel bill is going to look like. So.
And so regardless of all this fabulous capital improvement planning, you've also got to take care of an unexpected emergency situation.
That's right.
And tell us what your top priorities are from a public works point of view as you look toward the coming year.
Well, you've asked me about our capital improvement plan, which is how we build new things. But it's important in my mind to remember that the county already has almost $600 million of assets already. And I think our first responsibility is to operate and maintain those to a proper level. You know, our roads, our utility, our parks and open space. So that's a first priority. And then the second thing is, as Catherine already mentioned, is to improve our processes for actually building those processes. You know, that's kind of a two-step thing. There's making sure you do the project right, and then there's making sure you do the right project.
I want to thank Catherine Miller, Santa Fe County manager, for your time. Adam, director of public works here at Santa Fe County, thank you so much as well.
Thank you, Mary.
Yeah, thank you, Adam.
That report by KSFR's Marion Cox.
Support comes from Lannan Foundation, presenting a reading and conversation with Jamaica Kincaid on Wednesday, October 16th, 7 p.m. at the Linzic. Novelist and short story writer Jamaica Kincaid's books include Lucy and Annie John. Her recent See Now Then chronicles of the death of a marriage like a beautiful elegy. Kincaid, whose work has been called loosely autobiographical, has said, "Everything I say is true and everything I say is not true." Tickets at the Linzic or TicketSantaFe.com.
26 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. A designer drug, popular as a party drug some years ago, is making a comeback in New Mexico. Ecstasy, or MDMA, is finding favor with a whole new group of people. Here to discuss the issue is Dr. Stephen Seifert, the medical director for the New Mexico Poison Control Center. Dr. Seifert, what is ecstasy?
Ecstasy is a drug that's in the amphetamine class. And it has some other effects. Notably, it's an hallucinatory drug. And so you get all of the standard amphetamine-like effects, increased wakefulness, some higher blood pressure, more rapid pulse, and some other effects that the drugs in that class cause, plus hallucinations. It makes it popular as a rave drug and in other settings.
How long does the high last?
Well, that's variable, but many hours. So it depends on dose in part, but it's a somewhat durable high.
Some hallucinogenic drugs, such as LSD, are generally not used often enough to cause either tolerance or withdrawal. Now, does the same hold true for ecstasy?
You can develop tolerance to amphetamines. People do develop dependence. Methamphetamine is, you know, the drug that's most likely to do that. It may be that there are different people using different groups of drugs for different types of effects and experiences. So it's hard to say. The withdrawal symptoms from drugs in the amphetamine class are generally milder than in, say, from the opioids. And a different spectrum of effects, but you can become physiologically dependent upon the amphetamines if you take them regularly at high enough doses, and you can become tolerant to the effects if you take them regularly.
And where does the drug used here in the U.S. come from?
I would imagine that most of the ecstasy coming into this country is manufactured outside of the country in clandestine laboratories. So that's the first problem with taking a drug that's not an FDA-approved pharmaceutical, and that you have no idea who made it, under what conditions, what the actual strength might be, and even whether or not you're getting the drug you think you're taking. We found when we analyzed specimens of ecstasy, MDMA is the chemical abbreviation, sometimes we find MDMA, but sometimes we also find other drugs substituted for it that have similar effects. So other amphetamines might be substituted. You might see things like caffeine and ephedra derived from some plant sources. We've even seen synthetic cathinones, the so-called bath salts, which have similar effects substituted. And we've seen methamphetamine substituted for ecstasy. So when you take a drug that's like that, that's not an FDA-approved product, not a pharmaceutical, you really have no idea what you're getting. And that is part of the problem with taking drugs like that.
What side effects can occur with its use?
Mostly assuming that you actually have gotten MDMA, it's going to be the adverse effects of the amphetamine class as a general rule, extremely high blood pressure, rapid pulse, you can see seizures, and hyperthermia. Your body temperature can go up into dangerous ranges. These drugs can be fatal if taken in large enough amounts.
Who seems to be using the drug now?
It is a drug that is in use in teens and 20s who are attending parties, raves, and other places where those effects might be desired.
Why the renewed interest in the drug?
The drugs go through cycles, so they get popular, and then people experience some of the problems with it, and perhaps use falls off because of that, or perhaps a new drug comes along that becomes a craze, and people shift from one to another, and then it's rediscovered by a new generation or a new group of people, or it has a new application. It's hard to say why we see the cycles that we do. It was quite common some years ago for ecstasy to be adulterated or actually be substituted with other products. So, as I understand it, it began getting a bad name among people who wanted to use it but weren't sure what they were getting and were pretty sure they were getting other things instead of ecstasy. Recently, a supposedly more purified form and reliably present chemical was starting to be marketed and going under the name Molly. So people thought, well, here's a way of being sure that I'm getting what I want. I'm getting the ecstasy in a pure form, and it's being marketed as Molly. But whether that's true or not, I have no idea. It may be a marketing technique. It may simply be the typical sort of cycle we see with psychoactive substances. But you still have no idea when you're taking something like this what you're getting.
How can a parent tell if their child has taken ecstasy?
Things that people would notice would be disturbances in sleep cycles, mood. There may be disturbances in thought and content. I mean, if somebody is actively hallucinating or having disordered thinking, these may be signs of mental illness, of course, but they may be signs of active drug intoxication. Depends on the substance, depends on chronicity of use and the vulnerabilities of the individual doing it.
Anything you'd like to add?
When you're using a drug that's a non-pharmaceutical product, you have no idea what you're getting or what the effects really will be, what the dose is, and what your response to it will be. And so these things undergo no testing. There's no quality control involved in their production. There is an experiment going on, but you're the experimental subject. And sometimes the results can be devastating.
Dr. Stephen Seifert from the New Mexico Poison Control Center, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
The Lenzik proudly presents the Hungarian State Folk Ensemble with an evening of traditional dance and music from Hungary on Thursday, October 3rd at 7:30. Based in Budapest, these dancers and musicians share their country's lively, colorful traditions. For tickets to the Hungarian State Folk Ensemble on October 3rd, call 988-1234 or visit ticketsantafe.org. The Lenzik is a nonprofit, member-supported organization.
On September 28th, New Mexico, along with the rest of the nation, will be celebrating our public lands. Here with the details is KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard.
New Mexico is blessed with lots of public lands, including state parks. On Saturday, September 28th, there'll be a National Day of Celebration of Public Lands. Christy Tafoya is the Field Support Bureau Chief for New Mexico State Parks.
Tomorrow is National Public Lands Day. National Public Lands Day started about 20 years ago and was a partnership between a lot of different federal and local agencies to encourage people to go out to public lands and to enjoy public lands, but also to participate in stewardship projects on public lands. New Mexico has an amazing array of public lands, not only our national parks and forest properties, but we also have 35 amazing New Mexico state parks. And we have a huge variety of different activities happening across the state. And in our New Mexico state parks, we are working towards having a lot of different programming that is not just for getting people outside and getting them engaged, but also participating in stewardship and volunteerism.
One of the interesting adventures planned close to Santa Fe is a search for tarantulas in the Cerritos Hills State Park.
Cerritos Hills State Park is just right outside of Santa Fe. It's a beautiful little park. We have a visitor center there, and we also have some really great trails that are up in the hills there that not only, you know, depict our mining history that we have right next to Santa Fe, but we have some really wonderful natural resources, and tarantulas are part of the ecosystem up there, and you can join park staff to learn about these wonderful creatures and also try to find them.
There are other activities nearby to help celebrate the day.
We have a wide variety of cool activities. The Rio Grande Nature Center State Park in Albuquerque is hosting a nature walk, which is really neat because not only do you get to learn about the Bosque ecosystem right next to the Rio Grande, but it's also an opportunity for you to practice your Spanish because it's a Spanish and English tour. So that's a really fun event. We're also working with the Department of Game and Fish to put on a great event tomorrow. It's also National Hunting and Fishing Day. That's why you have some free fishing across the state. And so Fenton Lake State Park in the Jemez, right near the Jemez Valley, is going to be putting on National Hunting and Fishing Day events. And those activities will be free, and there's going to be free archery and fishing instruction, fly tying, aquatics education, and a lot more. There's a lot of different stations, so families can come out and learn about great resources and enjoy a day at the park.
Christy Tafoya with the New Mexico State Parks.
We have wonderful public lands in the state. New Mexico State Parks are a real treasure. We have 35 of them, and I would encourage folks to get out and enjoy our state parks.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
12:36 here in the KSFR newsroom. Here, just past the bottom of the hour, is the perfect time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
My Sunday morning routine is, well, fairly routine. I go to the store owned by the son of Albert, get my coffee, and buy my lottery tickets for the upcoming week. I carry the tickets in one of those clear plastic sleeves. I know, geeky. Well, last Sunday, instead of putting the tickets into my car, I decided to carry the tickets around while I did a little shopping. Well, guess what? Yep, I lost the lottery tickets. I retraced my steps. No tickets. I thought, well, maybe somebody found them and turned them in. Yeah, right. Somebody found them all right and kept them. Now, just because the person who found and kept the tickets is a low-life, thieving, slithering, duplicitous, gutter-crawling, sewage-swelling, dung-eating, poor excuse of a human being without a moral compass who deserves bad things to happen to them, I carry no ill will. All I asked God was to show the person the error of their ways. And if that involves a little pain, okay by me. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we will conclude today's edition of At Noon. If you join us at this time tomorrow, you can catch At Noon Weekend Edition, wherein we'll revisit some of the feature stories we covered for you in the past week. In the meantime, this is Dan Garrity with you here at the News Desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge, Marion Cox, and Charles Maynard. We'll all be back for you on Monday with more news of and for New Mexico, and as always, we hope you join us.